This talk is taken from Joseph Goldstein's book, Mindfulness, A Practical Guide to Awakening, which is an explanation of the Satipatthana Sutta, or the Four Foundations of Mindfulness. And here in the chapter 18, we're looking at the fourth foundation, and within the fourth foundation, the hindrances. The hindrances are desire, aversion, sloth and torpor, restlessness and worry, and doubt. And this particular part is on restlessness and worry. Defining restlessness, it can mean agitation, excitement, distraction, or simply without rest. And worry is a mind state of anxiety. It often includes regret. It's how we feel about not having done something we should have done, or having done something we shouldn't have done. It is possible to have restlessness without worry, but they usually come together. So first, in this very systematic way Joseph has of going through the hindrances, first we look at how restlessness and worry manifest. And he has something he likes to call yogi mind. And in his explanations, he's often talking from the point of view of practice, or really intensive practice, where we're on retreat. But for many of my examples, I'll use examples more from daily life. But in yogi mind, he says, and this is significant because this does apply all throughout our lives, times when our thoughts are completely out of proportion to their importance or connection to reality. That is, again, times when our thoughts are completely out of proportion to their importance or connection to reality. So we can think of a lot of times that happens. We might not know it when it's happening, but certainly with some mindfulness or in the retrospective, we can begin to know this. So what are the some of the small ways restlessness and worry can come up? It can be a nagging or persistence, that a sense of something is wrong. And we might know this only through, say, some kind of symptoms like excessive eating or shopping, ways that we might distract ourselves so that we're not able to be with what might feel difficult. In the worry part, that's also can be described as a general anxiety, there can be regret about a past unskillful action, or worry about some imagined future problem or action. And so the essence here in worry is that we're basically either in the past or in the future, worrying, regret about the past or worry about the future. And as we all know, worry, anytime we are worrying, it has no bearing, absolutely no bearing on the outcome. Another kind of subtle restlessness or worry can be in our comparing minds. And we do often compare ourselves to others on the spiritual path, in the sense of how are we doing compared to others. And this sense of comparing mind, or a kind of competitiveness, can easily move to self-judgment or judgment of the other. So again, systematically, we move on here to knowing the causes of restlessness and worry. And first, this requires knowing that restlessness and or worry are present, or if they're absent. So just that ability to identify when restlessness and worry are happening, that we can begin to name them. And then we can investigate what causes the hindrance, this fourth of the five hindrances, to arise. And often we can begin to see this restlessness and worry as an imbalance of concentration and energy. Restlessness often comes from an excess of energy and not enough concentration or steadiness of mind to hold it. Again, this is not what we usually think of as restlessness, but if you think about restlessness as a lot of energy that's happening, that perhaps has us in monkey mind, moving from one thing to another, or a kind of worried mind that zeroes in on something, there's a lot of energy behind that and not enough concentration or steadiness of mind to begin to hold or reflect on the this excess energy. It happens when there's an unwise attention to our thoughts. We get attached to our thoughts, believe our thoughts, think we are our thoughts. The unwise attention to states of worry, or I like this word, disquietude, which is another word for restlessness. We get drawn into the content of our minds and don't have the capacity to reflect in a larger way of being able to call it restlessness. We're sometimes pulled into restlessness, restless thought activity, because of the deeply ingrained idea that thinking leads to wisdom. We often think we can think our way out of something. If we just think about it enough, we'll figure it out. It goes to kind of a figuring out mind, which keeps the mind very activated, but mostly going in circles. And this is Joseph speaking. He says, thoughts can be creative and lead to a deeper understanding, but there is a whole domain of insight and wisdom that is beyond the realm of discursive thinking. It is a realm that can never come through the thought process, but only through direct experience. No matter how much we read or think about a good meal, it will never give us the experience of actually eating it. And I think this is apropos that when we're thinking about something, we actually, in our thinking about it, our figuring out mind, we actually can kind of keep ourselves from direct experience. Another cause of restlessness and worry is unwise attention. Where are we putting our attention? And apropos of these current times, current events, if you will, how much attention are we putting to the presidential campaigns and the people running for president? If these aren't even in our editorials daily or on the front page of the paper, occupying a lot of what goes on in our collective minds. Is this wise attention? Has it been wise attention? Mental agitation contributes nothing more than confusion. So is this kind of attention causing mental agitation? We can also cause restlessness and worry with too much talk. And this is often manifest in our access to instant communication that can keep us from what we know as that sacred pause, the sacred pause, or that sacred pause that allows us to look at and perhaps contain our reactivity. I remember when cell phones first came out, I was on a train and somebody got on. I couldn't help, and neither could the many of us around her, overhearing a conversation she was having on the phone, which went something like, now I'm walking on the train, now I'm looking for a seat, now I saw a seat, now I'm sitting in my seat, now I'm talking on my phone and sitting in the seat. This might be a good example of too much talking, or what we also know as TMI, too much information, more than we really need to know. Another cause of restlessness and worry is the ways that we can dwell on our past, particularly unskillful actions. The mind can obsess on those, going over it and over it as a form of regret. I wish I hadn't said that, or I wish I hadn't done that. Can easily go to self-judgment and self-recriminations. We all have things or have done things in our past that weren't wholesome or we wish we hadn't done. And this will say more about this, about remorse, but the difference between regret and remorse. Can we learn from past actions without dwelling on them and not get stuck in these self-judgments? There's a restlessness and worry that can come from judging our progress on the Dharma path. How am I doing? This can apply anywhere in our lives. This question, this kind of egocentric question of how am I doing? I know when I first started teaching, I was very nervous about it, and I would ask this other teacher, how am I doing? How do you think I'm doing with my teaching? And she wisely reflected that it wasn't so important how I was doing, but how were the students doing? Were people getting something? Was I watching how people were hearing and able to pick up the Dharma and finding some ways that it was useful for them? There's a famous pithy phrase that I heard once some time ago from Joseph Goldstein that he heard from a teacher, I don't remember the name, but it's quite lovely. It goes like this, sit and know you are sitting, and all of the Dharma will be revealed to you. And so this is that capacity to be present with whatever is happening, that quality about what he talked about in the meal, experiencing the eating of the meal, that quality of direct experience and knowing that direct experience and only that. So now again, kind of systematically looking at what conditions the removal of restlessness and worry. How do we find our way out of this restlessness and worry? It's easier to identify how we get into it. Of course, mindfulness, what we talk about so often, is the way to find our way out, or what might remove the restlessness and worry. And again, that quality of mind that knows that restlessness and or worry is happening, and that we identify it so that we're no longer caught so much in the narrative of the restlessness, the storyline, but that we identify restlessness is happening and that we understand restlessness is like this. This is the experience. Restlessness is happening. This is the experience of restlessness. Worry is like this. Worry has this quality of future projection. As we are able to identify the quality of the mind state rather than being identified with the particular content or story, it can take the personalization out of the having of that mind state at the time, so that when we know that the mind, what the mind states are like, instead of something I am doing, it helps us to recognize that this is simply a mind state and that we know the fleeting nature of mind states rather than taking them so personally. This is the nature of mind to get restless, to be worried. And Joseph puts it like this, whenever we feel the mind is not settled on the object, not at rest, we can become mindful of the restlessness itself. So when we don't have concentration, we can become mindful of the restlessness itself. Notice the physical energies in the body. Notice the difference in the emotional tone between restlessness and worry, so that you can distinguish one from the other. So this gets very interesting. As our mindfulness gets stronger, we can distinguish the difference between restlessness and worry. restlessness feels more scattered. It kind of has that sort of papancha flavor to it. And worry feels more like anxiety. It has a more sort of obsessive quality about it. As we become mindful of these states of mind, rather than being lost in them, the mindfulness itself starts to bring the factors of concentration and energy into balance. So as we become mindful, as we get less caught in the story, identifying the mind states, and further refining that kind of identification, is this restlessness, is it worry, as we begin to bring this nuanced mindfulness, that the energy comes more into balance. There's more concentration in the mind. And this particular kind of mindfulness is bringing attention to the whole body energy and the larger mind state of restlessness or worry. Another way to use mindfulness is to be more precise with the attention. It's like a zooming in. Instead of the wide-angle lens, it's a zoom lens. And there's more concentration required that directs the energy, so that we might even just settle on the breath when we notice the mind gets restless, the scattered attention, or the worried, the obsessional attention. We might do a concentration practice. When we strengthen the concentration, the body-mind-heart system settles down, and the mind gets calmer. So again, another part of removal of the restlessness, worry, is when we practice wise reflection. You know, how are we reflecting on what's happening? And I was reminded when I first started teaching Buddha Dharma, I would get really nervous before I was about to give a talk. I would worry about if I knew enough, if I had kind of the imposter syndrome, that I really wasn't qualified. And I was also had some worry about speaking in front of a group. And on my way to class, that worry I could feel really increasing as I was on my way to the class. And it didn't seem to matter how much I prepared, but I would go into this worry state of whether I was be able to do a good job. So on my way to class, when I noticed this worry would happen, the wise reflection I brought was, why am I doing this? So that I could really align myself with my intention. Why was I going to do this? Why was this important to me? And I knew how much it meant to me to share the Dharma, and that my intentions were pure. And speaking about the purity of intention, here's a poem from Galloway Kinnell, often quoted in the Buddhist tradition, St. Francis and the Sow, and this is just the first part of it. The bud stands for all things, even those things that don't flower. For everything flowers from within, of self-blessing. Though sometimes it is necessary to reteach a thing its loveliness, to put a hand on its brow of the flower and retell it in words and in touch, it is lovely, until it flowers again from within, of self-blessing. The bud stands for all things, even those things that don't flower. For everything flowers from within, of self-blessing. Though sometimes it is necessary to reteach a thing its loveliness, to put a hand on its brow of the flower and retell it in words and in touch, it is lovely, until it flowers again from within, of self-blessing. And Joseph talks about this part of the poem. He says, flowering from within of self-blessing requires distinguishing between guilt and remorse. Guilt is an unwholesome factor of mind that simply reinforces the sense of self with negative self-judgment. I'm so bad, with an emphasis on the I. Guilt is simply an ego trip of the mind. So this is the unwholesome factor of that reflection that goes to self-judgment and can often just go to self-berating. Remorse, on the other hand, acknowledges the action, understands its unwholesomeness, makes amends when possible, and then moves on. This is an act of self-forgiveness, which is honest in its assessment and wise in its understanding of impermanence and selflessness. So remorse allows us to see where we might have gone awry and understand the unwholesomeness, and then make amends if possible. And the important part is that we move on. We don't stay in the obsessional thinking about what we did, because there's self-forgiveness involved. And that self-forgiveness is honest and wise and understands the changing nature of all phenomena and our impersonal existence. It also helps to have a good sense of humor and not take ourselves too seriously. And lastly, this way of what can allow us to not be in these mind state of restlessness and worry is that capacity to know that awareness is already present, it's already here. I've had the experience lately of a lot of little things bothering me, but essentially I know that everything is okay. And that's an awareness of that sense of awareness is here, already present, and nothing is wrong. Awareness is not something we have to go searching for, but it is already here. And Rumi says it this way, out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and right doing, there is a field. I'll meet you there. Out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and right doing, there is a field. I'll meet you there. And lastly, I'd like to read this poem from John O'Donohue. The name is For Equilibrium, a Blessing. Like the joy of the sea coming home to shore, may the relief of laughter rinse your soul. As the wind loves to call things to dance, may your gravity be lightened by grace. Like the dignity of moonlight restoring the earth, may your thoughts incline with reverence and respect. As water takes whatever shape it is in, so free may you be about who you become. As silence smiles on the other side of what's said, may your sense of irony bring perspective. As time remains free of all that it frames, may your mind stay clear of all it names. May your prayer of listening deepen enough to hear the depths, the laughter of God. Thank you for listening.